Morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DeGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower here till 5 a.m. And, we're here till 5. And we got Dmitry Semirov coming up after 3 o'clock. My good friend Dmitry is going to come in and talk about all the stuff that he's been writing lately and book reviews and columns and all that cool stuff. He comes by once a month and more. It is Thursday, and we are saying hello to our first guest this morning. Dan Feinberg is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, The Fine Print. He joins us once every couple of weeks to talk TV, and that's exactly what we're going to do. He's a busy man right now, and he'll tell us all why he's so busy, but he took some time to do the show again. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you much, Nick.
All right. How you doing, sir? You all right? You holding up?
I'm doing well. Your description of my busyness was probably very, very apt.
Yeah. So we'll tell everybody where you are and what's going on.
I am in Beverly Hills at the Beverly Hilton Hotel for the Television Critics Association press tour, which we do every January and every July into August. And for the people who don't know, it's the time twice a year when the networks and cable networks and streaming networks and everyone, they all come together, and between 250 and 300 TV critics are in a room, and we watch one panel after another for new and returning TV shows coming out over the next 6 months. It is nonstop. I believe today was day 8, and I think we are maybe halfway through.
Oh man, does it ever get? Do you ever just get numb and have to take a break?
Yes. and then there's no time to take that break. Definitely there is a one thing after another sort of, I don't want to say tedium exactly, but routine to it. And then just when you think you've seen everything and your brain is ready to atrophy, Mariah Carey comes out with a troop of topless male dancers and sits down on them and calls them collectively couch. And then does a very strange kind of Mae West-inspired piece of performance art for her upcoming new ETV series, Mariah's World. And then you go, okay, well, that was at least different.
Oh, my God. So there's still room for surprise then at this thing, huh?
There is still room for absurdity. There is still room for things that make you scratch your head. And that was today's thing or yesterday's thing that made me scratch my head. But, you know, it's amazing to know that you can still be surprised.
What were some of the highlights for you in terms of panels? What panels were memorable?
It's so hard to tell anymore. It blurs because Netflix was like 7 or 8 days ago, and we had a really good panel for Stranger Things, which I know we both love, and that was kind of interesting. It didn't get renewed that day, but it sounds as if everybody involved wants to eventually come back to it. So that was a pretty cool thing. Always interesting to have HBO panels where we got to meet the new HBO executive in charge and realized that he didn't know how to talk about sexual violence, and that caused a minor kerfuffle, and that was strange. We started with the networks yesterday, and that was NBC, and we got to Mariah Carey today, so it just keeps going.
What was the thing with the sexual violence HBO controversy? What happened there?
Basically, what happened there was Casey Bloys, the new head of programming at HBO, was just up to that position a couple months ago as part of the sort of overhaul at HBO They sort of, I don't want to say panic because they're still doing very well, but as they realized that it was time to do a little changeover, reconsider some things. So basically HBO brought 6 panels, and 2 of them were for dramas, Westworld and The Night Of. And both of the 2 dramas that we have used incidents of sexual violence as the catalyst for the storytelling. So the question to the executive at HBO was, do you do this a little bit too much, given various controversies at Game of Thrones and whatnot? And he didn't really know how to answer. And it became sort of awkward because it required multiple versions of the question before he was willing to not joke about how, oh, we kill everyone at HBO, we don't just kill women. And it was just not as smoothly handled as one would like. But, you know, first time press conferencing for reporters, and he'll maybe figure it out next time. Maybe.
Wow. Now, I'm looking at some of the other highlights that you talked a little bit about, or you wrote about. One of them is the day five quotes, which include Bill Hader's origin story and MTV's Broad City with a Blonde. Can you explain? Well, first of all, let's talk about Bill Hader's origin story. What's that all about?
Well, basically, it was one of those things where it was a panel with Bill Hader and Fred Armisen for Documentary Now, and things were wearing down, and a question from the crowd came in: when did you first realize you were funny, or something like that? You know, sort of one of those extremely extraordinarily generic questions,
right,
that probably people have answered a thousand times. So Bill Hader tells some story about how he was four in Tulsa or something, and he made his grandmother laugh. And then Fred Armisen starts trying to up that by telling a story of growing up in the favelas of Brazil. And it went back and forth. It was really just a wonderful, glorious piece of improv between these two people who are so ridiculously talented.
Yeah.
And that was very entertaining. And the other part of that headline, the Broad City with a Blonde, MTV has a show from the guys who brought you Can't Hardly Wait and Josie and the Pussycats, and it's called Mary Plus Jane. You'll be shocked to know that marijuana is involved. And then once I tell you that, you'll also be shocked to know that Snoop Dogg provided the theme song.
Mm,
so, okay. It's much outside-of-the-box thinking going on here. And it's reasonably funny, but it is so very clearly influenced by Broad City, except for the fact that the people who created it are both in their upper 40s, lower 50s, as opposed to being the two stars of the show. But the creators denied that it was in any way inspired by Broad City, as I guess they would. That's the kind of thing that happens at press tour. Lots of, gee, are you jumping on the bandwagon of this successful show? It's not that. It's actually somewhat funny, and
yeah,
I think we have potential, but it's so very much MTV's attempt to do Broad City.
Yeah. Okay. All right. And I happen to love Broad City, so whenever I see the name Broad City, I immediately you mentioned that there was a panel for Stranger Things. Also, there was you talked to the Duffer Brothers.
I did.
Yeah. Well, tell me about that, because for people who might not have watched Stranger Things, I mean, it's become a bit of a phenomenon. You know, anytime I check my news feed, you know, there's something. There are people talking about it all over the place, and everybody I know who's watched it has really flipped over it, including myself. So, what was the conversation with the Duffer Brothers like?
It was just talking about influences and whatnot. So, you know, we talked about our favorite Stephen King and our favorite Steven Spielberg. We talked a bit about It, which was collectively all of our favorite, in that conversation at least, all of our favorite Stephen King novel. They talked about how they had at one point wanted to adapt it, as many, many people have, as it's been sort of going through different writers and directors into this current incarnation that we're going to see in a two-part movie starting next year, I think, at some point.
Yeah.
It's just interesting to see these two guys who really, as we talked about last time, their background is basically they had worked a little bit on Wayward Pines, and they'd done one movie that nobody saw, and Netflix was willing to sign on to their vision. And it's, you know, we don't know how successful anything is on Netflix, and we never will, but it is absolutely the thing that people are talking about, and the thing that people are talking about, weeks after, a couple weeks already after it premiered, which doesn't always happen with Netflix shows.
Yep.
Sometimes it's 1 week and out, and this one really is gaining new viewers. So it's impressive, and it's obviously doing well, whatever well means, because, again, we'll never know. But, you know, Netflix will eventually get around to doing a second season, and the Duffer Brothers obviously want to, and they told me they were committed to doing a second season of this ahead of whatever hypothetical big-ticket projects Hollywood is bringing them. But you have to assume that now these guys who couldn't get into any room 2 months ago are suddenly getting meetings for all sorts of crazy things, and we'll see how long they can resist, you know, jumping on board a $100 million superhero movie that gets offered to them.
Yeah, which is inevitable.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. All right, Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, The Fine Print. We got more TV stuff to talk about. We got to take a break for the news here on WGN. And when we return, more with Dan Feinberg. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower, here till 5 o'clock. Coming up after 3 o'clock, my friend Dmitry Samarov is going to be live in studio, and we're talking about some of the stuff that he's written. Former cab driver, now a great writer, and always a great artist, and he's got a lot to talk about, and it's always fun to have Dmitry in. He'll be coming in after 3. Right now, we're talking with Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. He visits with us every couple of weeks. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, The Fine Print. And we welcome Dan back to the show. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you much.
All right. We mentioned it. We've talked about it before on the show. I'm almost finished with season 3 of BoJack Horseman. And It's a very, you know, Esmeralda, who does traffic with us on the overnights, is also a huge fan of the show. And we find it, it's very difficult to describe to people what it is. And but I, you know, let's talk a little bit about it. There's specific things I want to talk about for this season. But again, explain to everybody what BoJack Horseman is.
BoJack Horseman is just your basic animated Hollywood satire about a manic depressive horse who starred on a sitcom in the late 80s and 90s and whose career sort of fell apart for a couple decades, but still managed to leave him well enough off to have a gorgeous house in the Hollywood Hills and a hanger-on named Todd, voiced by Aaron Paul. And last season, he finally got to make his dream project, a biopic about Secretariat, and in season 3, he becomes an Oscar contender.
Right. So that's what the show is, and it's a very difficult show to describe. Will Arnett is the voice of BoJack, and there are several, you know, cameo voices done by everybody who's funny. I looked at the IMDb, you know, listing, and you know, because I was curious as to see, because a lot of them just show up and do, you know, like one offs, but that, like, everybody who's ever been funny is on this show at some point,
and plenty of people who haven't been funny either.
Yeah, no, yeah, absolutely. But it's just such an original and such a strange show, very very funny, also very very sad and heartbreaking. And it sneaks up on you. And we've talked, you've talked about that in the past, and I am now experiencing it because I'm almost through with season 3. I just want to point out one episode in season 3 so far that I found to be, absolutely, stunning. And I haven't gotten to the end, cause I know that, you know, Esmeralda's watched the whole season 3, and I know you've watched it. And talk about how it gets, like, really, like, emotional. I think you said it was the penultimate episode that really does it for you.
Indeed, every season, the penultimate episode is the kick you in the nads episode.
Yeah.
So this season as well, that
okay.
is the case.
I've got that to look forward to, which I'm excited about. But I want to talk about the episode that's titled "Fish Out of Water," where BoJack goes to this underwater. Underwater Film Festival to plug his movie Secretariat. I thought that episode was stunning. It was so weird and so beautiful and very claustrophobic and, you know, like everything it touched on. It was also, it did homages to old cartoons and it was just this beautiful piece of television with what I think is one of the funniest final jokes and blackouts that I've ever seen. Like, I was laughing for 5 minutes when the credits started. I was just laughing for 5 minutes. And it was just kind of a mind-blowing episode. How did you feel about that episode?
Oh, it is. There is no question that when we get to December, that will rank as one of the, you know, four or five best episodes of TV, or as always, whatever the heck Netflix is
right.
the year.
Right.
It's the fourth episode of the season. And yeah, like you say, it's a tribute to classic animation and classic, almost silent comedy. And it's beautiful and it's emotional and it's hilarious and weird and so totally engaging and gripping. And it's just magical that they were able to do it. And it is such an inspired episode. And it comes, you know, two episodes after the 2007 set flashback episode,
right,
which
right.
is also, in a totally different way, brilliant and clever and makes you stop the frame every, you know, 20 seconds to catch five little in-jokes here and there.
Right.
But that joke, you know, that episode is satire of an almost conventional nature, and the fourth episode, the underwater episode, is on a different level.
Oh, yeah. It's just stunning. The last joke at the end, it just was, because it was such a release at the end of it, because like, there's a really heartbreaking thing that happens before the end, and it involves a note that he writes, and it's a really heartbreaking moment, and it's like, and then this discovery at the very end of the episode is just like this, all this pent up weirdness and feeling that you have while you're watching this particular episode just comes flying out in like guttural laughs, at least for me. Like that final moment.
No, no.
That final moment,
it is a great ending.
Yeah. I just thought it was phenomenal. I really did. Okay, so let everybody know about these things that you're doing called Take Me to the Pilots. They're not reviews of pilots, and a lot of the pilots, you're watching a lot of the pilots for this upcoming fall season, but they're not technically reviews. You're just kind of like taking notes while you're watching them, correct?
Yep, it is just my gut reactions, because pilots change all the time, and it's basically just part of the process. This period where we're at the TCA press tour is when we start getting panels for all of these shows, all of these new series that will premiere in September and October for the most part. And yeah, the Take Me to the Pilot series is just, okay, I'm going to write 250 words about these shows. Just
okay.
Off the top of my head, I'm not going to form paragraphs, just going to do it.
Well, we like to talk about those. Just your, you know, your notes, your thoughts as you're watching these pilots. Let's start with Pure Genius on CBS. Tell everybody what Pure Genius is and your thoughts on it.
Pure Genius is created by Jason Kadams, who folks will know from the most recent TV version of Parenthood, and also from the later seasons of Friday Night Lights and the earlier seasons too, but more for the later seasons. He is also, like, he executive produced The Path, which I still have not finished on Hulu because there's too much TV.
Right.
And he's a guy who is very reliably able to do shows that are a little bit funny and a little bit emotional and a little bit smart. And unfortunately, Pure Genius is not necessarily so much that. It's mostly a CBS medical procedural about a tech billionaire who decides to pour money into medical research by bringing in doctors and trying to come up with magical futuristic technology that kind of takes the human element out of medicine. But it turns out that an emotional, very human doctor played by Dermot Mulroney is about to teach him that medicine is still both technological and human and all of that stuff. And unfortunately, it's very, very conventional and not nearly engaging enough. And the leading man, Augustus Prue, is British and has a really difficult to describe American accent, which is very distracting. That is the kind of thing that distracts me sometimes more than other people, but in this case, I suspect it will distract many people. On the other hand, it is a CBS medical procedural, and it's kind of brighter and sunnier than Code Black, which aired last season and mysteriously got renewed, so maybe it will be successful. With CBS, sometimes you just don't know.
Okay. All right, so that's Pure Genius. That was your thoughts on that for Take Me to the Pilots. Now, what about This Is Us? This is an NBC show. You have thoughts on that one as well?
Certainly do. We actually had our panel for that yesterday, 2 days ago. Again, who knows? The days all blur.
Right.
It is on NBC. It's from Dan Fogelman, who also created Fox's Pitch this season. And so he actually did two of the best pilots that are premiering this fall. Neither one of them I don't think is necessarily great instantly, but both have a lot of potential. So the basic premise is basically that there are a lot of people who have the same birthday and their lives are intermingled, and they're played by a lot of actors who lots of people know and love. So you got Milo Ventimiglia, you've got, at least people love Milo Ventimiglia, I don't know necessarily. You've got Mandy Moore, who's been trying to get a TV show on the air for a number of years. She's had a bunch of pilots, and none of them have gone to series, but this one did. And then, best of all, probably for me at least, is Sterling K. Brown thing to get a series lead role coming off of People vs. O.J. Simpson, which is very good for him, and he is excellent. The pilot is kind of funny. It's kind of emotional. It's actually all the things you expect from a Jason Kadams pilot, but it's not from Jason Kadams. So it's, I think it has a decent chance of being a good family, you know, sort of people being family. So sometimes funny, sometimes sad, sometimes happy kind of thing. And it has a bit of a twist at the end that we're not allowed to discuss yet. And it is a bit of a twist at the end.
Okay. All right. So that's This Is Us. What night, do you know what night that's going to air in the fall?
Oh, God. Who even remembers any of these things anymore?
Well, it's This Is Us. It's This Is Us, and it's NBC. So you can look forward to that. Okay, Dan, hang on, okay? We're going to come back and talk to you a little bit more, okay?
Sure.
Okay, Dan Feinberg is with us from the TCA Summer Press Tour, where I believe he's close to losing his mind. He's the TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we're going to talk more with Dan Feinberg right after we take this break on 720 WGN. Morning, everybody. Hi, how you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. How you doing? It is a Thursday morning, and we are talking with Dan Feinberg. Dan Feinberg is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. He joins us every couple of weeks. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, The Fine Print. And we're talking with Dan in the midst of the TCA Summer Press Tour. And so how much longer does this go on, Dan?
Forever. basically, we finish with this tour, and then we get to sleep overnight, and then we start on the next tour. No, the honest answer is that it continues, I think, until the 12th.
Wow.
Which I don't necessarily know what day today is anymore, so I think today is roughly the halfway point. We got here last Tuesday, maybe. So
wow. Okay.
Yes. We still have ABC, we still have CBS, we still have CW, we still have Fox, we still have FX, we're doing a day with Amazon, we're doing a day with Hulu, a day with YouTube. We have our TCA awards over the weekend, which we're looking forward to. So many days.
Okay. Now you mentioned Netflix. What are people talking at all about Gilmore Girls? Did they do a panel for Gilmore Girls?
Oh, they most certainly did do a panel for Gilmore Girls. So it was one of the shows that we didn't actually get screeners for. So we got screeners for a bunch of the upcoming stuff on Netflix, including The Get Down, which premieres maybe next week, mm-hmm. possibly not this Friday coming up, but the Friday after, maybe. And then Luke Cage, which premieres in September. And we got a Gilmore Girls panel because it is premiering basically Black Friday. So they're attempting to take down big shopping in their industry. and we'll see if that works. We had a panel with basically Amy Sherman-Palladino wearing a big hat, and Lauren Graham and Alexis Bledel, and also Daniel Palladino. And they all talked very enthusiastically about getting back together.
Yeah. I happen to love Gilmore Girls. So I'm very, very excited about the reboot. And now, did anyone ask how in this new season how they're going to deal with the death of Edward Herman? Has that come up at all?
Oh, I mean, they're going to. It is part of what is setting the show in motion, or the events of the new episodes in motion, and they're just going to acknowledge it. It's going to be something that the show is going to deal with and honor.
So Richard, in fact, the character of Richard is dead.
I believe that is how it's going to be addressed. That they're going to mourn, because obviously this was a cast that loved Edward Herman, and because most people who worked with him seem to, and you know, I think they think that it would be wrong to ignore. I don't know how important Richard was to that show and how much of the heart of that show he was at times. And I think the show is just going to head on, acknowledge and deal with the loss. And, you know, it's a show that has the ability to go, or did when it was at its peak, as emotional as it wanted to. And so I assume they will grieve. And I assume they'll probably do it in a way that will be sad, but also a little bit funny, and will basically honor him. So
yeah, I'm just so excited about it. Black Friday, Gilmore Girls returns to Netflix. And I'm just very, very excited about that. Let's talk about a couple of other things. Are you watching Angie Tribeca?
I have not been watching this new season. I hear it's totally different from the first season. Is this true?
Completely different. Completely different.
Good way or bad way?
I think in a bad way. I like the first season for the most part. I mean, it was completely derivative of Police Squad. There's just, you know, there's no question about it. And it was it was clear that it was Nancy Carell and Steve Carell were just basically doing their version of the Zucker Brothers. There's no question about it. But they've changed it now. It's become more of a serial now. And now, you know, like each episode, they tell one single. It's telling one single story for the entire season. And I think there are funny moments in it. I just don't think. I think the changing of the format kind of, you know, I was disappointed in that. I don't know. I still watch it, and I get a few laughs out of it each episode. But I liked the one-off, you know, let's settle a case in 22 minutes like they did it in Police Squad set up much more than I like the single-story soap opera kind of setup that they've done now.
It's interesting. I hadn't realized that there had been this big change in this second season until we had at last week's at Press Tour last week. We had TBS and TNT and Kevin Riley, who is the head of all the Turner networks, talked about that shift, and I was sort of surprised and interested because, yeah, this is a show that obviously means a lot to TBS, and TBS has a bunch of new comedies that are still to come. So, you know, at Press Tour we had People of Earth, which is an alien abduction comedy starring Wyatt Cenac, and it's pretty promising. And we had a comedy with Aaliyah Shawkat called Search Party that won't be out until late November that I found extremely promising, potentially. I think you may be very interested in them, but we'll get there in, you know, however many months that is from now. We'll see if I'm still at Press Tour then. But yeah, so I hadn't heard about it till then, and now I'm curious. So now, whenever this thing ends, I'm really going to go and check out a couple episodes to see. I don't know, you know, does it seem like the kind of thing where this feels like an experiment that they're doing, and where a third season might be something else, a different kind of thing, or does it feel like they made it more conventional?
To me, that's I think it's them, you know, like trying to experiment. But it's a combination of both of them, because I think it is more conventional. It's weird because they're trying to kind of have their cake and eat it too, and do the ZAZ stuff, and yet also satirize, soap operas and you know, these one story seasons. They're trying to satirize that. But to me, it's like I don't really care about the characters. They're not it's one of those things. It's like they set it up in the first season as these are one dimensional. Like, I don't care about Frank Drebin's, you know, marriage. You know, I mean, that's not, I don't care about that. And that's what they're trying to do in this second season. It's like if they had a second season of Police Squad where suddenly you cared about their, you know, their relationships and their you know, and what's really going on in their lives, it would change the course of what the show was really about in the first place. And I just thought it was a very strange change. So
it sounds it because, yeah, as you say, the first season was not in any way really character-driven.
No.
So you decide to back into that is an odd choice.
Yeah, it's very strange. I just didn't know whether you had seen it or not. Okay, let's talk about the evaluation of the late-night shows during the conventions. You wrote a piece about the winners from the Republican National Convention. And then I
missed almost the entirety of the DNC. So anything that happened after that, you can tell me.
Okay. All right. Well, let's see. I would say that for both conventions, the strongest show, I think, without question, was Colbert. Without question, the Daily Show, it kind of missed the boat for me. It's basically the same thing that you wrote about for the RNC happened with the DNC. And tell everybody about what you wrote about in terms of the late night winners for the Republican National Convention.
Well, definitely, I thought Colbert was the big winner, largely because he was able to get his voice back. He was able to find some of that edge that was so lost for basically the last 6 months. And that was at least in big part because he was able to go back to his roots. He brought back the Colbert Report character. He brought back Jon Stewart, who got to go behind the desk and was fantastic.
Yeah.
He got to bring back Lewis Black, who made a couple appearances on the Trevor Noah Daily Show, you know, in the last 6 months, but never really felt like he was at home there, and instantly felt totally like he was at home with Colbert. So I thought that was probably, I thought he was in that respect easily the biggest winner. Now, I'm curious, because I haven't been able to watch, what would you tell me about all the stuff that's happened in the last week involving basically the fact they can't bring back the Colbert Report character, but they've still brought back the word, but they've spelled it differently? How is that working?
You know, I'm not really sure. I didn't see as much of what was going on with the DNC. I saw some of it. I'm not sure what they're doing with the. I know that they're not. You know, the character was just temporary. I wasn't aware that there was the spelling thing happening. I just thought, and from what I had seen, that they brought the Colbert character back just for the conventions. And now he's gone.
They did, he's gone, and apparently they killed him, but then they, because Viacom lawyers wanted them to, apparently there's been a whole thing. And again, this has all taken place when I've been in a place where I've been watching endless TV, but none of it's the TV that's actually airing.
Right.
A kind of weird time loop. Like, I every once in a while, I glance at my phone app that tells me what's happening on my DVR, and it makes me kind of sad. So,
right. Yeah, no, I can't give you details on that. I'm not really sure. But I can fill you in a little bit on Big Brother.
How's it going in the last week? Who's up? Who's down?
Well, I got to tell you, when was the last time you saw it? Did you say a couple of weeks ago?
Let's see. Pretend last week didn't happen at all. Just pretend last week is a gigantic blur that
okay.
You don't remember and that I sure don't remember.
All right. Well, we are now finishing up tonight on Thursday's show. Someone will be eliminated under Paul's HOH. So Paul, not Paul Lee, Paul.
That's, I think, good, because I think we both decided that we liked Paul somewhat, surprisingly.
Yes, exactly, and I like him more with each with each episode. It's basically gotten down now that it's Paul and Paulie. They're now called PP, and they have kind of teamed up to try and run the house. And basically, you know, they had. Did you know Frank got booted? Right.
Yes.
Okay, so Frank got booted, and now they've got this thing. They keep adding twists. It's gotten to the point now, Dan, where, like, the whole have and have not thing, you barely get to see the HOH room anymore because they've added so many twists that so much of the other stuff has fallen to the wayside. But now they got this new twist, which I'm sure you know about, I think you know about, where they had figured out this puzzle, this Paris puzzle, and everybody got themselves a ticket, an airline ticket. And if someone who gets booted has the round-trip ticket, they go right back into the house. You knew about that.
I did not.
Oh.
Why do they keep doing stuff like that?
I don't know. So everybody got a, everybody, you know, had to figure out a puzzle. There was a secret room. Everybody went into the room at different times as they figured out the puzzle, grabbed an airline ticket, and when you get booted, Julie Chen opens the airline ticket. If it's a round-trip ticket, you go right back in the house. If it's a one-way, then you're still booted. So Frank was the first person where they used it on. He had the one-way ticket, so he's not coming back. But now Bridget and Day are on the are liable to go home. Either one of those is going to go home tonight. So that's where it's at right now. And Paul and Paulie are kind of running the show, and everything else is kind of where it was before.
So. And as I've said before, this is always the period of the year when I lose Big Brother, and then I have to decide if I want to jump back in.
Yeah.
So I'm going to need you to tell me.
I will. I'll keep you.
I will
keep you informed. Hey, listen, Dan, I really appreciate you taking the time. I know it's crazy busy for you. You know, everybody can follow you on Facebook and Twitter at TheFineprint, F-I-E-N, and HollywoodReporter.com. Dan, have fun, man, and stay sane.
I will try to stay alert, and always a pleasure, Ned.
Okay, buddy. See you soon. There you go. Dan Feinberg, everybody, calling in from the TCA Summer Press Tour. It sounds like he's losing his mind. All right, we'll take a break. We've got the news coming up next on 720 WGN.